Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. Today's non-random guest is Anthony Pascal. Anthony, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So tell the fine folks in internet land a little bit about yourself.
For relation to Star Trek, I'm most known as the founder and editor-in-chief of TrekMovie.com, which has been around for a few years. I've shown up on a couple of Star Trek Blu-rays also, and spoken at a few cons. So I'm just kind of a Trek nerd who blogs about Star Trek.
You know a little bit about Star Trek is what you're saying.
I know a little bit, but I am not one of those people, and I do not disparage those people, who know everything. I have friends who know everything, and I call them up, and I ask them questions when we need it for an article, because I just don't, remember all those, little details about, and thank God for Memory Alpha, because, you can't remember, who was that actor who played that guy in that one episode, I'm not one of those guys who could just pull that all off the top of my head all the time.
That always impresses me when people do that. I have trouble remembering, people know the titles of all the episodes, and they remember exactly what happens and all the actors. I am totally not like that. I mean, I'm a huge Star Trek nerd, obviously. I have a Star Trek podcast, so that could be a first tip point. But I have a horrible memory, so...
So a guy with the Star Trek website and a guy with the Star Trek podcast are admitting that they don't know everything about it, which is good.
This is good. It's an open. This is a safe place, Anthony. Don't worry. we could discuss this. Now we do know a lot about Star Trek, though. So don't worry, people in internet land. We're not just some hobos with no Star Trek.
Oh, I've got a lot of opinions about Star Trek. There's no no shortage there.
Well, speaking of your opinions of Star Trek, what is your favorite Star Trek franchise?
Well, it's changed over time. It started with the animated series, which was my favorite when I was a little kid. And then I was an original series fan because that was all there was in the 80s. And I stayed an original series fan primarily even through the 90s. But I kind of fell out of Star Trek in the mid-90s. And in fact, episodes like this are part of the reason why that happened, which we could get into later.
They were so good that you had to stop watching.
But then interestingly after, maybe not that interesting, but I feel like I'm a born-again Trekkie in that maybe a decade ago, I started rediscovering Star Trek. I don't know when Deep Space Nine was released on DVD, but I think that I rewatched the entire thing before it was streaming on Netflix, and it became, ironically, my favorite series of all of them.
But today we are talking about a Deep Space Nine episode, so people can relax. Deep Space Nine. Although it's not the episode we're watching, perhaps it's not a high watermark of Deep Space Nine.
No.
It is Season 2, Episode 11, Rivals, or as Anthony tweeted out, the one with Prince Humperdinck in it. We have two people who are both aliens talking on the promenade, a woman and a man, the man being Prince Humperdinck, or the actor. And the woman is telling this man all about she's recently widowed and she has some money saved up and she's going to be investing it in this mining operation. And he says, well, that sounds risky. And she says, well, it's not risky because my father was a stellar cartographer. So he has, surveyed this asteroid and he found out that it has a big deposit of some impressive mineral and she'll make lots of money off of it. But she doesn't have quite enough money to make it happen. And she says, I don't know why I'm telling you this. I've never even told my husband this. And you're a complete stranger. Must be this wine we're drinking. And then they kind of pan to the back where Odo is frowning and watching this this happen. And so Odo comes over and breaks it up. He picks up who we find out to be Martis and says, hey, you're coming with me. Martis is like, we were just talking. And he says, well, actually, the woman says, we were just talking. What's the problem? Constable. And Odo says, "You were talking, madam. He was listening," which I thought was a very good line.
It was, although it's still kind of a weak, I don't know, it's kind of a weak opening, maybe because there's very little.
Not much happens.
Not much happens. It's two people sitting down, and there's only one of our favorite characters, and it's just at the end. And it's kind of so obvious from the beginning that there's a scam going on here.
Yes.
That there's no surprise. It's kind of like you know everything that's coming, and you keep on going, "What's Prince Humperdinck doing in Quark's bar?"
Why is he there? Really,
exactly. So, you really are hoping that the Dread Pirate Roberts is about to show up anytime.
He doesn't, sadly.
Yeah.
But we do find out that Martus is an Elorian, who, for fans of Star Trek, will know that Guinan is an Elorian. They are the race known as the Listeners. They're really good at listening. And Martus is a con artist who's been swindling elderly people all throughout Deep Space Nine, apparently. And so Odo throws him in the brig. Where Martus is trying to talk Odo out of, letting him out, but Odo will have none of it.
It's not the brig.
No,
brig is on a ship. So I just, I know that there's Trekkies out there saying it's not the brig. They only have a brig on a ship. So I just want to.
You wanted to voice the Trekkie.
So I'm being that guy.
Outrage.
Okay, guys.
Into the cell.
Right.
That would be a brig. If Deep Space Nine were a ship, but it's not, it's a station.
Exactly.
So, no brig. In the security office. Is that what they call them? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. I guess it's security office, and so their cells. Maybe that, now that I think about it, there maybe is some more technical name that I don't know. I just know it's not a brig.
So. You may not be 100% right, but you knew I was wrong.
Exactly, which is all that matters to a Trekkie.
That's right. Well, either way, he's in the Huskow. And that's the opening of the episode. And then we switch to Chief O'Brien heading down the corridor, looking very happy, holding a racket of some sort, which always excites me. Not that Chief O'Brien's holding a racket, but it means that I'm going to see some strange Star Trek game. And I always enjoy the wacky games that show up in Star Trek episodes.
Right, Star Trek sports.
Exactly.
Although in this one they didn't. It's not like Parisi Squares or some other crazy space sport. They just did a spin on racquetball.
Right. It's space racquetball.
It's space racquetball. It's got the cool targets. They went to a lot of trouble to build a set that we never saw again.
It's true. And I had some quibbles with this. So Chief O'Brien is walking down. He goes into this space racquetball court that he has built apparently somewhere in Deep Space Nine. And waiting for him is Dr. Bashir in a very interesting, tight little jumpsuit that he apparently wears, that one professional space racquetball players, I imagine, wear. And he's there. They're going to play space racquetball.
I love this scene. I love everything. I love anything with these two actors. I love anything that's, with Bashir and O'Brien. Just their outfits alone, Bashir's in his shiny suit. You could just imagine the modern day equivalent. Bashir's kind of the douchey guy in the super expensive outfit.
Yep.
And O'Brien's the schlubby everyday guy in just a t-shirt that's, a step away from becoming a rag. And but it's great. This is before they, it's before they're singing Jerusalem and being all drunk. This is early on before they're really friends. But this is kind of a pivotal episode where they're bonding in a way as, rivals, I guess.
The
irony is that they're the B story, and their rivalry is the more interesting rivalry than I think the rivalry that this episode's supposed to be about is between Martus and Quark.
Right.
Who I don't think has yet to run into Martus.
Nope.
And they never have the kind of chemistry that you would want in a real rivalry like you get with Bashir and O'Brien. So, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you.
No, that's the whole point of the show is to interrupt me.
The whole point of the show. Okay.
Exactly. Well, you're right. I love these scenes as well, and I love the fact that, Julian is clearly one of those guys who went out to the the space sports store, and he bought all the fanciest equipment that he could find so that he could play space racquetball. But my question is, and maybe you can answer this, Anthony. So it is clear that O'Brien has built this physical court. My question is, why doesn't he just go to a holosuite and play space racquetball on a holosuite?
Well, because he's a regular guy. There's an analog kind of element to him. So he probably feels that, you know, the bounce isn't right unless you actually build the wall out of a certain kind of wood or something. You know, I mean, who knows? But, you kind of appreciate that. Or maybe, you know, he just likes to build things with his hands. You know.
He is an engineer, so maybe he had some spare cycles. So it's clear Bashir, very good at space racquetball. O'Brien is an enthusiast, but not the sector champion, and he didn't play in Starfleet Medical, much like Bashir. So we find out Dr. Bashir beats O'Brien and kind of basically ruins what O'Brien was looking for, which is like a nice, friendly game of space racquetball. But now it is a space racquetball rivalry, which is not
well. But it's unclear why he built. If he built this court, who was he going to play?
Well, he figured somebody on the station would be a fellow space racquetball enthusiast, but sadly, it had to be Dr. Bashir.
I mean, like with the Ellurian thing, this is another episode that has a different spin on it now that you've seen the whole series, because now we know, of course, that Julian is a genetically enhanced individual.
Mm-hmm.
And everything he did, he had to control his incredible, you know, genetic awesomeness.
So Martis is in the cell, and is also, there's someone else in there with him who is snoring, so Martis wakes him up.
I think it's a Nausicaan, isn't it?
I thought it was a Nausicaan as well. But it is not. His name is Kos, C-O-S, and he is an unidentified alien race. He doesn't have the pointy, hooky things that Nausicaans have.
Oh.
He's close to a Nausicaan.
He's Nausicaan-like. He's a Nausicaan offshoot.
That's right. He's
from the southern continent on the planet Nausicaa.
That's right.
You know, they don't get out much, you know. They have an inferiority complex because they're not, you know, nearly as cool and...
They're not as tough as the Nausicaans.
Right.
Well, he's there. This Nausicaan-like guy is there. And for some reason... Now, this is where I question Odo as a security officer. Because not only does he put two people in the same cell, which seems like a bad idea, but maybe all the other cells were filled up. I don't know. I'm not a space security officer. Although
they weren't clear when he was brought in.
That's
so
true.
Maybe there was some kind of crime wave in the inner, you know, that night or something.
Who knows what happens in the promenade. And so he wakes him up. Martis wakes him up. He wakes up and he tells the story of woe about all his luck is so bad. And then he brings out this strange purple globe that he has. And I thought to myself, shouldn't have Odo taken that away from him? That could be like a thermal detonator to cross Star Wars and Star Trek together. Who knows what that thing is. And yet he just has it in a cell. It seems like a bad choice on Odo's part. And so this alien is telling his tale of woe about how, you know, all his business deals fell through. You know, his gambling, every time he tried to gamble, it would be awful. And he presses a button on his little globe, and it doesn't light up. It makes a weird noise, and he's like, oh, I have awful luck. And Marta says, yeah, you really do. And then he presses a button again on his little purple globe-y thing, and it lights up. And he's like, oh, finally, I won. And Marta is like, well, what did you win? And he looks back, and the alien is dead. And so Martis does what anyone would do. He takes the globe, and then we switch to Bashir and Dax at the Replimat, apparently, Memory Alpha's telling me, where they're eating space hamburgers and talking about Bashir is like, well, Brian was going to die, and I tried to, you know, I didn't want to beat him, but I couldn't help myself. And so he basically had his nurse call him and say, hey, you have to come to sick bay before O'Brien passed out, because he felt bad for him. And also, for some reason, they decided that Julian Bashir should go to as many tables as possible and look for a non-empty, weird container of space ketchup as the scene is going on.
It's really gross brown-looking stuff, too.
Yes. It was very strange.
I remember, I don't know why, but it's like one of the things I remember when I first saw this episode way back in 1994, and it just thinking it was really gross. Whatever, you know, even the food looked gross.
That's right. You know why you remember that? Because it's so gross and so weird and such an odd choice. They spend a lot of time.
It's like, come on, it's, you know, it's the 24th century. Food is supposed to be better, isn't it? I don't know.
No. We are back in the cell, which is not the brig, and Martis has been playing with his orb and winning several times. And as soon as he wins, he's like, oh, I win again. And Odo comes in and says, well, the elderly couple's not pressing charges, so you can leave. And Martis is like, great, what did I tell you? So Martis makes a beeline for Quark's bar, where we find Quark and Rom are engaged in some gambling with Morn to see if he will pay for his drink. The house always takes blue in this very exciting two-sided die game that they're playing. Morn loses and has to pay for his drink. So Martis comes up and says, hey, I want a drink. Quark says, I know for a fact that you don't have any money, so how are you going to pay for this drink? And so Martis says, well, I'll give you this thing. And he puts the purple orb on the bar, and Quark says, oh, what's that? And he says, oh, it's game. You press this button, lights up, and everybody's happy. And Quark, for some reason, is very intrigued by this game, which, let's talk about this game.
A game is a game. A game has input. And that's the thing. When you look at the orb, it seems like there should be something going on with this thing. But in the end, it is essentially no more complicated than tossing a coin in the air. Because there's basically one input, which is you click a button, mm-hmm. and there's two possible outputs. You either win or you lose.
Yep.
And that's not a game. You know?
It is not a game at all. And I mean, I could see perhaps, you know, it flashes, it makes some noises. It could be interesting for a little bit. But Quark is super interested in it.
Which is why I always thought, because I thought this thing is so stupid and Quark is so smart, that I always thought there was something about the device that had a kind of psychic compelling nature to it.
Oh.
Which they never talk about in the episode. This is kind of me. This is
explaining.
Fanning.
Yeah.
Basically, because it's so stupid, you have to add some. A lot of Star Trek is kind of a build your own adventure. And in this case, my adventure is that this thing, whoever built it, they never explained that, which is fine. It has some kind of psychic alert, because otherwise it is a completely pointless and useless and non-interesting thing. And I always thought that was really the fault of the, you know, who are usually great, but the kind of prop guys not really, you know, it wasn't written interestingly in the script. So right. That's true. But they didn't make it any more interesting. They just went with what was in the script, which is described as a orb. But they, you know, they should have made it more interesting. I mean, if you go to Las Vegas, every game gives people the illusion of choice where they could choose options. Mm-hmm. You gambling, you know, I can't think of any game in Las Vegas which is just 50-50. I mean, even when you bet on red or black, there's other choices.
And it's exciting because there's a big wheel, it's spinning around, there's a ball. This, you press a button and it might light up. That's it.
Yeah.
Nothing else happens.
And it makes this, like, sad sound when you lose. I don't know.
It's a little sad trombone. So it's not interesting, but Quark is super interested in it because we will assume it has some kind of psychic compulsion to it. Or, you know, we find out, spoiler alert, even though this whole podcast is a spoiler, that this thing manipulates probability. So perhaps, since Martis is winning so often, it has manipulated probability, and so it makes Quark want it because. Quark is super interested, so he says, I'll give you this money for this little toy that isn't worth anything, but I want it. And Martis is like, tell me more. And Quark is like, well, I'll also give you this free drink. Martis says, ah-ha-ha, I probably would have sold it to you, except that you gave me the free drink, and now I know you really want it, so give me 100 times more you offered, or it's off. Quark says no. Martis says, peace out, Quark, and leaves. And he walks out into the promenade, runs into a Bajoran woman whose husband died, and she's packing up her storefront, sadly. Business was great, but, you know, the thrill is lost because her husband is dead. And he says, Marcia says, well, things are better with a partner, aren't they? And then, like, 2 seconds go by, and he opens up his casino. But in between that, we go back to Bashir and O'Brien.
Yeah, he built that casino really quickly. I mean, that casino was... That was fast.
It was super fast. In the time, so there is a scene in between when the casino, he swindles this lady, basically, and opens the casino. In between, there's a scene where Julian and O'Brien are once again playing racquetball, space racquetball. Space is important. And O'Brien, it is clear Bashir is throwing the game, like, in the most obvious way possible. And O'Brien is very upset, and he says, if you're not going to play, don't play at all. And he leaves. And then we go back to the promenade where we find Marcius's casino is open in like 15 minutes. He has replicated giant versions of his purple orb, and everybody has left Quark's bar and is off having a good old time in Club Marcius, pressing buttons.
Which is getting back to the whole psychic compelling thing, because Quark has cool games. He's got Dabo, which is very complicated, you know, and Dabo Girls. Although I guess he brings a Dabo girl over to become an orb girl, I guess.
That's right.
The nucleus. She's no longer Dabo girl.
She's upgraded.
Exactly. anyway, sorry. So now we're in the casino, which everyone wants to go to. So this is why it has to have some psychic control, because there's no reason to go to this casino.
No, it's a pretty boring game, and even when it's bigger, it's just bigger and boring. But everybody's having a great time at Club Martis. Everyone but Quark. Quark runs down to Commander Sisko, and he says, basically, you need to stop this, because I have the exclusive rights for gambling on the promenade.
Well, of course, what you just said is a supreme example why this is a weak show, which is... We're halfway through the episode, and this is the first time we've seen the Sisko.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes Deep Space Nine awesome is Sisko.
Well, speaking of Rom, we find out – so Quark is abashed because Sisko won't shut down Club Martis. And then Quark goes back to his bar, and he sees Rom walking over to Club Martis with Martis.
That is the one good line from Sisko in this entire episode, which is when Quark said, you begged me – to stay, and he's referring now to the pilot,
mm-hmm.
when everyone is going to leave, and Sisko says, no, I blackmailed you, which I always thought was just so awesome.
So Quark has lost all of his customers, he's lost Rom, he's lost his Dabo girls, all to Martis, and he doesn't understand what's going on. And then back, the woman who we saw in the beginning and in the teaser goes to Club Martis, and she's like, oh, I can't get the money I need for my mining expedition. And Martis is like, well, I can probably help you. How much of a return are we talking
about? Now, who didn't know what was going on? As soon as she comes back, you're like, oh, okay. Now I see what's going on.
Exactly.
She's trying to scam him. Mm-hmm. If you don't see it in this scene, I mean, maybe it's – you know, it's hard for me to remember what I thought back then, but in rewatching it, and I'm like, oh my God, this is so
clear.
Obvious. And maybe it's because television has become more sophisticated over time, but it just seems like, God, that's obvious that she's going to scam him, and he just doesn't see it.
Martis proposes to the woman, the Bajoran woman whose shop he has turned into a casino. She's very excited. He invests his money in this woman he met earlier in the episode to do the mining thing. So Martis's luck seems to be going well, but elsewhere on the station, things are going a little strangely. We see we're in ops. Major Kira is talking to Dax, when all of a sudden Dax finds this computer program that she's been looking for forever, and it just happens to pop up. We cut to the space racquetball court, and Chief O'Brien is on the floor in pain, and Bashir explains, I've never seen anything like it. You stepped on the ball as it was going towards you. So he goes off to the infirmary to help them. Actually, O'Brien refuses to go to the infirmary, and he goes to Quark.
So now we're starting to get, there's some science fiction going on around here.
Yeah, something is happening.
There's some sci-fi thing happening. Finally, halfway through the episode, like, oh, wait, we're in space. There's got to be some sci-fi happening.
In addition to space racquetball.
Right, exactly.
Some other science fiction aspect. So O'Brien is sad and in pain, so he goes to Quark. It's Quark's bar to drown his sorrows, but nobody's there.
Because he's not affected by the psychic field because O'Brien is impervious.
That's right. He doesn't truck with these psychic fields.
Exactly. He's not drawn to that place.
No, he wants to go where he always goes because that's the kind of man Miles O'Brien is.
Although, strangely, Morn is not there, and you'd think Morn would be impervious.
That's true. Maybe Morn is off doing whatever it is Morn does.
Although, do we ever see Morn in the other place? I don't think we do.
I don't think we do. He's just, maybe he's there in course, we just don't see him because he's in the bathroom or something.
I guess. The space bathroom.
Exactly. I don't know if Morn needs to use the space bathroom, but I would assume he is. He's at the little Morn's room.
Exactly.
So O'Brien's like, where is everybody? And Quark is like, ugh, they're over in Marta's place, just because he listens. I can listen. And there's this cute little scene where Quark is obviously not listening to what O'Brien is telling him. And then Quark has this great idea of staging a big space racquetball tournament between Bashir and O'Brien to get his customers back, which I don't understand that scheme, but Quark is very excited about it, so...
He's grasping at straws at this point, I think.
And he thinks it's going to be a great idea. And then we're back in Ops, and sadly for Kira...
I love in that scene, though, with the bored Dabo girl in the background. Just kind of like hanging out, you know.
Doesn't have anything to do.
Exactly.
She didn't want to turn into an orb girl. She is dedicated to Dabo, but there's nobody playing.
I mean, this whole episode just kind of smacks of something that happens in between other episodes. You know? It's like this really isn't an episode. This is almost like a webisode of like what happens in between the two cool episodes is here's people just kind of hanging out on the station, drinking coffee, eating gross space food, you know.
There's just looking for ketchup.
Exactly. There's no urgency at all. Everyone's just kind of hanging out.
Searching for code in the database. You know,
exactly.
As you do.
Yeah, some important code. No, just something, you know.
Just the guy I've been looking for. Not that important.
Right, you know.
And then we get to the – so Major Kira's in Ops doing, you know, filling out a form, actually.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. This whole episode is full of people – they should just call this mundane. You know, that's what's happening in this episode.
It's pretty – so she's filling out – and she's sad because her browser crashes, right? And she didn't save her report, so her report is gone. And she's like, ah, computers. Lots of people are having minor injuries and bad luck across the station. Sisko pops in to say, I've heard that a lot of people are having mishaps. And then back in Club Martis, uh-oh, everybody has won the jackpot on these stupid orb things. And so Martis has to pay everybody because that's the way it works. He's unhappy. And then we cut to Quark. He's very excited. He's gathered a crowd somehow, promising them the greatest sporting event ever between Miles and the Doctor.
And Morn is back.
He goes where the action is, Morn does. And he sets up this – Quark sets up this tournament between Bashir and O'Brien, of course, not telling them that he's doing this. And he says all the profits or 10% of the – half the winnings will go to the Bajoran War Orphans Fund. So Bashir and O'Brien kind of reluctantly agree. They're like, okay, we'll do it. And because Quark says the monks have made a down payment on the blankets for the winter or for the orphans, so they have to do it.
Orphans.
Orphans. It's all about orphans. And then there are more mishaps in Ops. Dax has lost her computer program that she had thought she had found. Kira had tripped earlier, everyone thinks that there must be something going on. So the Sisko and Dax and Kira are off trying to figure out what's happening.
Sisko comes out of his office now. Now something's happening.
That's right. She's like, well, I heard something's going on. Let me leap into action. We'll find out what's going on. Club Martis, we switch to Club Martis, which is empty because everyone's over at Quark's because they're very happy about this racquetball thing, space racquetball thing. The Bajoran lady who Martis is betrothed to walks in.
People are very trendy on Deep Space Nine. You have to admit, like, things just, you know, these flash in the pan things, like, oh, you know, we're really into these orbs. Like, oh, I hate these orbs. I want racquetball.
That's right. There's an orb in racquetball, but it goes fast. It's all orb based, though.
Very, very fickle. Very fickle.
Oh, Deep Space Nine. Well, there's not a lot happening. Martis is, you know, having his way with a Dabo girl, and his Bajoran to be walks in on him, and she's upset. She
orders
him out.
That Dabo girl gets a lot of screen time in this episode. It doesn't get a single line. I don't even think she has a name.
I don't think so. She's just a Dabo girl. Plot device, Dabo girl. And so the Bajoran says, get out and take your stupid orbs with you. And so he leaves, and he's very sad. This is when he runs into the arms of that woman he met earlier and says, okay, I'll give you all my money. Martis, that is giving all his money to this woman to do her mining thing because he, you know, he's fallen on bad luck. But
exactly.
Spoiler alert, it doesn't work out for him. And so now we're on to the grudge match of the century between O'Brien and Bashir. Everybody is, you know, they're gearing up for it. There's a cute scene where Quark goes into Bashir's the infirmary and says, hey, Julian, you should drink this energy drink that monks have been having for, you know, thousands of years. And Bashir's like, all right, well, let me just see what's in it first. And he scans it and he's like, what? There's a sedative in here. And Quark explains that no one's betting on O'Brien. And so Quark bet on O'Brien and he wanted Bashir to basically throw the game so Quark could make some money, which I think it's probably one of the best things in this episode because that is a very Quark
thing to do. See, that's
the
thing is Quark is a true lovable rogue because if you think about it, he's basically because we love Quark, but he is poisoning. He is attempting to poison the doctor so that he
can make money for the orphans, though,
right?
Really.
So he can illegally manipulate a game. You know, I mean, it is a horrible thing that he's doing, but we're like, ha 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 ha.
Oh, Quark.
Isn't that? Oh, Quark. You're just hilarious. And he is hilarious, and he pulls it off, which is great. And that's Armin Shimmerman, and that's just, you know, good writing. And so in this episode, they prove that they could do a lovable rogue.
But
they just
one.
Can't do two at once.
That's right. They can't have concurrent lovable rogues. It's just a singular lovable rogue at a time.
Exactly.
So back to the science fiction. Dax figures out, oh no, the neutrinos, 80% of the neutrinos are spinning clockwise, and there should be 50-50 clockwise and counterclockwise.
And you can, of course, imagine in the script it was, I've discovered brackets, technobabble, brackets.
That's right. That's
and
really
we
all you
must
need to know.
Brackets, technobabble, the brackets, you know. So, yes, she's discovered that the science fiction is doing the science fiction. They've got to tech the tech.
That's right. They've got to scan for the science fiction and locate it and shoot it, basically, is what happens later. But
right, exactly. That is one of the most – I mean it almost shows like, okay, how do we get out of this? Why don't we just shoot it? Like it's almost like you could sit there in the writer's room and it's like 11 o'clock. It's like, can anyone think of anything better than just shooting it with the phaser? No.
No.
Okay. Let's do that.
We're done. This episode is done.
Can we get home now?
And so that's what happens. There are some odd things going on in the racquetball match. They find out that you know, O'Brien cannot miss, but Julian cannot hit. Dax and Sisko find out that the source of these wacky things is Martis's old club. And they say, hey, where did you get these devices? And he says, oh, I found them on a dead guy. and I made them bigger. And they're like, oh, this is throwing off the probability on
the
space station.
But now, you know, Julian, who is genetically superior, should have been the one to figure this out. It's like he knows that he's been holding back this whole time. The fact that he can't.
Well, they do figure it out together. O'Brien and Julian figure it out together.
But Julian should have really, you know, O'Brien's the one who really figures it out. Julian should have said, there's something really weird going on here because
I should totally be beating you.
I could kick your ass with one hand tied behind my back. No problem. No offense. You know, so there's definitely something going on here. But he should have immediately assumed it was Quark because Quark did just try to poison him.
And his
racket just broke. So his his immediate assumption should have been Quark has done something here.
Quark is up to no good.
And I always thought that was kind of a missed opportunity for them to have some kind of –
They could have had a little – yeah.
They could have accused Quark and dragged him in and, you know, maybe thrown him into space jail, but no.
Nope. And then so they walk in, and this is the point at which they figure out something's going on. Sisko and Dax trace it to Club Martis. They say, hey, where'd you get these devices? He says, I made them bigger. They say, okay, well, clearly the only option we have is to shoot them with our phasers. So they destroy all of the devices. Everything goes back to normal. They throw Martis in jail, on his way back, he notices that the woman who he had been invested all of his money to the mining colony is also being escorted into jail because she herself is a con artist. And that lets Quark gloat a little bit. And then the episode's over. That's it.
Yeah, the way this episode ends is really kind of odd. It just the way it all...
They shoot things and throw them in the jail.
Well, they have the scene which should have been the big payoff at the end with Quark.
Oh, that's right. Quark comes in and gets him out of jail.
Right.
And, so he can gloat.
He talks him into – Martis talks him into giving him some money so that he could leave. And this, you know, this is the chemistry that just didn't work, the chemistry between the two of them. If this paid off, we would have definitely seen this character again. But Humperdinck just wasn't pulling it off, and off he goes.
Off he goes into wherever he goes.
And never see him again.
Never to be seen.
Maybe he showed up in a book or something. I'll have to check Memory Beta to see if they ever wrote him into anything else. But.
Yeah, that's it. That's the end. That is Deep Space Nine Rivals. So what did you think, Anthony, overall?
Well, you know, part of the reason, as I mentioned before, as, you know, every week I watched Next Generation religiously when it aired. It was must-see TV, of course. But this was right as that show was winding down. And this was one of the seasons where both it and Deep Space Nine were on. And I remember I just kind of slowly drifted away from Star Trek. When Next Gen was off the air, I didn't feel the same need to catch every episode of Deep Space Nine. And episodes like this were the reason. It wasn't grabbing me as much. And you almost appreciate it more now because you are more in love with the characters, but at the time the characters weren't grabbing me as much, the plots really weren't, and this almost felt like a rejected Next Gen episode.
A recycled Next Gen episode where they were like, well, we have this that we never produced, but it's cheap except for this space racquetball set we have to build.
So it's a middling show. It's not the worst of Deep Space Nine, but it's certainly not the best. It's better on reflection because it's almost like you could see some great early stuff with Julian and Miles, who's my favorite. I mean, Julian has some of the best chemistries. Sadig gets some of the best work because he has – my favorite relationship is Garak, who isn't even in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his relationship with Garak is fantastic, and then his relationship with Miles is fantastic. So you get some elements of that. There's very little, you know, if this is a Quark episode, the best thing about Quark is his interactions with Odo, and there's none of that in this episode.
They don't interact at all, I don't think.
Barely, if at all. And they have great chemistry, and they don't use that at all in this episode. So it's kind of more of a missed opportunity. And then the whole sci-fi element of this episode makes no sense.
No.
And is never fully resolved. What is this thing? Where did it come from? Why does it do what it does?
It just blowed up.
You know, exactly. And the solution is just ludicrous. But the thing is that it fits perfectly with the kind of lackadaisical element of this entire episode, which is let's just shoot it. You know,
just like they did this episode. Let's just shoot it.
Exactly. That's perfect. You know, you can almost feel like them doing that on the set that day. You know, I feel like I've been bagging it, which is weird, but it's only because it's my favorite series.
Right.
And this, you know, isn't. Well, the best, you know, you certainly would never want to show this to someone and say, you're going to love Deep Space Nine. Let me show you Rivals.
No. Right. And we, you know, and we make fun because we care and we love Star Trek. And so.
Exactly.
And this is, to be clear, not an awful episode, but it's one of those mediocre Star Trek episodes that there are plenty of them.
No, because there's some episodes that are unsalvageable. I feel like this episode is salvageable.
It has good parts in it, and they could have made it into a good episode.
Well, you know, Whoopi Goldberg would have made it, you know, would have totally changed this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it maybe could have been because if they had her in mind originally and then they didn't get her, that they kind of never fixed it properly without her. I'm not sure how far they went along with her, the idea of her being in it. Better casting certainly would have saved this episode. You know, another, you know, rewrite to sci-fi it up a little bit more. You know, like, you know, maybe we get a visit from the people who made these things, you know, and maybe
they want to collect them or something. Like,
right, they can explain, like, why do you have this thing? We're going to blow up your station if you don't give it back. You know, or it could have been like a Twilight episode where it really was a child's toy from some super being, you know, and that, you know, and they don't want you to be playing with these toys
because you don't understand how they work.
Right. So, again, the choose your own adventure version of this is great. You know, it's good, you know, and it's fun to talk about, like all Star Trek. So it's always, you know, it's enjoyable in that alone.
There you go. Well, thank you, Anthony, for joining me and talking about this episode. I don't have a sign off, so we're just done.
Well, I was glad to do it. It was fun. So thank you for inviting me.
Next on Random Trek, the second pilot of the original series, Where No Man Has Gone Before.